I was feeling very creative when sermon title time came around. Peace is hard. It's simple, but I think pretty true. Mindful on this 15th anniversary of, I think it brings us all back to where were we, what was it like? And I remember hearing murmurs that something had happened in the passing period between study hall and French class my junior year of high school. And it's really all we knew until we got home and could see what was happening on television. And I didn't realize then what I've come to know now, which is that even as a teenager, I was starting to learn what would be my life's calling, which is that we want to be formed in the way of peace rather than violence. And I didn't know as a junior sitting in my high school French class that I would get to spend my life teaching other teenagers what it means to be a peacemaker, to choose love and kindness over violence and destruction. And so I have the privilege this morning of telling you guys a little bit about the incredible experiences that you all supported for our teenagers this summer, whether you know you supported them or not. We're all a part of that as a church family. And I know sometimes getting a report back like this can feel like an obligatory like family slideshow. Or like when somebody hands you a wad of photographs of their kid and you're like, they're really cute, but you still have like 800 to go. So I just want to give you a snapshot. Our middle schoolers had the chance to go to Portland for a week and immerse into the lives of homeless men and women living there. My small group, we had adults with groups of four or five middle schoolers, and we were tasked for a whole day from 7 a.m. till about 4 p.m. to simply be outside, to simply immerse ourselves in that limited way that you can when you have privilege, but in that limited way to immerse ourselves into the life of what it might be like to live outside. And it's super awkward for middle schoolers to do this. And we encourage them along the way to talk with people, to actually engage with some of our neighbors who were living outside. And if you know anything about middle school social skills, that's really difficult with like human beings you see every day. It's like astronomically hard with people who are strangers who might look different than you or smell different than you or just look kind of scary. But we had this chance, and as I was walking with my small group through one of Portland's parks, I noticed up ahead a man playing a harmonica. And it was clear by the way he was dressed that that he spent a lot of time outside. And since my students were hesitant to initiate conversation, it's awkward, right? Like, you don't just walk up to people and try to start talking to them, usually, when they're playing their harmonica. But you can. And so I decided to kind of help jumpstart them a little bit. And so, of course, as we're coming near to him, I said, "Hey, I have a harmonica," which is like the most awkward thing to say ever. You can laugh, it's hilarious. This is a terrible opening line. "I have a harmonica," which turned actually into this incredible encounter with this man named Michael. He was wearing this weird kind of plaster hat. He's from Mexico. He's been living outside for a couple of years, but hadn't always. And Michael ended up not only encouraging me to actually play my harmonica, which I simply have, but he walked with us the whole rest of the day. Like, spent his day with this random group of middle schoolers from Bend, Oregon, telling us about his life, taking us to where he usually got lunch, eating with us, inviting us to meet his friends who also live outside, suggesting maybe that we not meet other friends who live outside. It was so cool to have this chance encounter become this immersive experience into Michael's life, where he ceased to be just another guy playing a harmonica who's homeless and became like a dear friend, where a couple days later we were having an event to serve some of our homeless friends, and the students were like, I hope Michael comes. Like, what if Michael shows up and we get to see him again? The BYC calls our trips not mission trips, but immersion trips. Because rather than believing that we go somewhere to bring good news as in a mission-type posture, we go believing that if we immerse ourselves, we will find that God is already at work in the lives of the people that we meet. Our high school students got to go to the San Diego-Tijuana border, and I know that immigration is a charged issue right now in many ways, but we got to see beyond the issues. We got to meet actual human beings who are affected by policies that are larger than life. We met a man named Hector who is a United States Army veteran and was deported following his service. We got to meet a woman who, because of a broken taillight, was sent back to Mexico and is trying to find a way to reconnect with her children who are still in the United States. We had a chance to ride along with our Border Patrol officers in their vans between the two walls that separate San Diego and Tijuana. We didn't, frankly, do all that much to be helpful. It wasn't like a lot of service projects. And we do that on purpose because I think as we're learning to be peacemakers, we talk about it having four steps. And that the first step is that you need to see. You need to be able to see the situation and see the people and kind of understand what's going on. You immerse, which means to really step into the other person's shoes and step out of your own comfort zone into their lives a little bit. And then we talk about contending, like that's where you actually get to do something to respond, to serve, to help. And we talk about restoration, which is that vision that we like to have as the church, as people who follow Jesus, that one day peace won't just mean ceasefire, peace will mean we're making something beautiful together with those who were once our enemies. And we take our kids, we don't do much contending, to be honest. We do some training in the C department, but what I've found is that seeing comes easier to me. I pride myself. I'm being very aware of what's happening in the world. Like, we know what's going on, right? I read the internet. I know what's happening. So I see, I'm aware, I can check that box. And contending is super satisfying, right? Like, I can get some stuff done. It's the American way. We help, we step in, we come to someone's aid, and we feel really good about it. What I wonder is if we skip this essential step of immersion. This is the one that's awkward and vulnerable and makes you say things like, hey, I have a harmonica. It's this awkward step that takes time and isn't all that satisfying and means that you're going to be just totally out of your element. But what I wonder is if we all committed ourselves to that immersion step of the peacemaking process, if the world wouldn't have a lot less violence in it. I believe that that the story of God is by nature immersive. Like God from the beginning has chosen to immerse into the story of humanity. It's not like God just set things in motion and is watching and seeing. And it's not like God is just from a distance kind of zapping things to contend on our behalf. But God instead chooses to enter into our story where the writer John even says, like, Jesus, when he comes, Jesus moves into the neighborhood. There's a sense that God longs to be present in humanity, in relationship, to like actually rub elbows with us. And so our story this morning, which I'm sure you're all thinking of by now, is from Luke chapter 8, the story of the woman who's been bleeding for 12 years. And I'm going to read it to you. Jesus has just healed a man who is either mentally ill or possessed with demons, depending on how you read the text. And he is about to go to the house of a man named Jairus and bring his daughter back to life. And in the midst of that, of course, a crowd is gathering around him. The crowds pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from bleeding for 12 years. And though she had spent all she had on physicians, no one could cure her. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his clothes, and immediately her bleeding stopped. And then Jesus asked, "Who touched me?" When all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowds surround you and press in on you." But Jesus said, "I know someone touched me, for I noticed that power had gone out from me." When the woman saw that she could not remain hidden, she came trembling. And falling down before him, she declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." I love this story because there's like secret background we get to track down. One thing is that a woman like this, in according to Judaic law, would have been considered unclean. And so that means literally she would have been exiled from her community, separated from her neighbors, and basically it would be illegal to touch her. And so this woman for 12 years has spent everything she had trying to be well and is isolated in every way from her community. And so hearing that Jesus has been healing, she steps into this crowd and reaches to just touch the hem of Jesus' robe, which is a weird choice to make. Why in the world would that seem like the way to be healed? But this tells me that this woman is familiar with the prophets, because in the book of Malachi, in the very last chapter of our Old Testament, and in the last chapter of the prophetic books for our Jewish brothers and sisters, there's a verse that says, "The sun of righteousness will rise with healing in its wings." And that word wings, healing in its wings, can actually also mean the hem or fringe of a garment. Cool, right? So this woman, being familiar with the Old Testament scriptures, is like, well, what if God is going to keep God's promises, and what if there really is healing in the hem of this man's garment? And so she reaches out and is healed. And then, of course, the ridiculousness of Jesus' question to his disciples, "Who touched me?" When he's surrounded by a crowd, Peter thinks that's a silly question. But he says, "I felt the power go out of me." And that's like this mysterious thing I can't quite understand, unless you have immersed into someone's life and offered healing and know anything about the sense that power might go out of you. That when we immerse into people's lives, when we rub shoulders with people, when we're actually sharing life together, we give up some of our power. Whether that's power in our energy, or power in our privilege, or power in our status, we lose some of that. And it's okay, because the result is healing and wholeness for our friend. And then I love that this woman saw that she could not remain hidden. She had been hiding for 12 years, and all of a sudden gets to come out of hiding and realize that she has not only been healed physically, but she has been restored within her community. She gets to come out of hiding and be seen. And then, of course, Jesus commends her for her faith, for believing that God might actually do what God says God will do, and says, "Go in peace." I wonder if that's what we're meant to do, to immerse into each other's stories so deeply that healing results, that wholeness results, that people are restored to full relationship with one another. And yeah, we might feel the power go out of us, but we wish each other peace. And that might seem, a little abstract, but I wonder if there would be less violence in the world if we all chose to pause and be immersive peacemakers, and we stopped to learn each other's stories and names and faces. I don't know that we could do violence to each other if we spent time on that step. Friends that we met in San Diego are named Sean and Maria, and they have... They've committed themselves to being peacemakers in their neighborhoods. And it's really hard and really simple. They have chosen in the midst of their neighborhood, which is a blue-collar, working-class, really diverse place in the city of San Diego, that they will immerse by sitting on their porch every night and saying hello to everyone who walks by. And as a result of that, they have had these adventures in immersing into people's stories that have brought wholeness and healing to people in their community. So that they are actually now known as a place where if you need help, if you wish to be seen, you stop by Sean and Maria's in the evening and join them on their porch. I was even, of course, you have to do some Googling when you prepare a sermon. Two things come up when you Google immersion. One is it's a very baptism-y kind of word. The church has like a monopoly on the immersion concept in terms of baptism. But then I'm scrolling to the bottom of the page, and this other link comes up, and it's like, what if I use immersion oil with my microscope? How will that help? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not a science-y kind of person, but for those of you that are, I thought this was cool. Ready? So sometimes when scientific people are using microscopes, somebody will correct me after this, I'm sure, and they want to get a clearer picture of the specimen they are seeing, they will use what is called immersion oil so that there is no air between the lens and the specimen. And this allows for more light to get in when they use the immersion oil. And it makes for less distortion in the picture so that they see the reality of what they're looking at clearer than they would if there was a gap. I'm telling you, the gospel is everywhere when you start to look, even in Google. There's something universal about this sense that if we actually immerse into each other's story, good will come of it. More light will come of it. Less distortion will come of it. And so one more story, and that is that I got a message from one of our students that went on our San Diego trip after we got back. And this is what I love the most, because I don't really care how the trip was. Don't tell them that. But I don't really care how the trip was if it doesn't make a difference when they get back to Bend. Like, the whole thing is pointless if it doesn't carry them through into their real everyday lives. And so I get this message from one of our students who says, normally, on the day when our housekeeper comes, she's from Central America, I pretend to sleep in so that I don't have to have an awkward interaction with her. Today I got up and I practiced Spanish with her. It can be so simple. And immersion means stepping out of our comfort zones a little bit and making a choice to enter into another person's world. Maybe there's somebody totally different than you. Maybe you simply decide that you're going to go to a different coffee shop than usual. You're going to drive down a different street. You're going to sit on your front porch. But simply to take a minute, to take time to be with people, to go out of your way to listen to their story, can change the world. And so it's no wonder to me that Jesus says to her, "Go in peace." Amen. I'd like to invite the ushers forward to receive this morning's offering.